Okay, hey, Donovan, how's it going?
Not bad, how's it? What's up, Nate?
Hey, I'm just putting on my radio voice because we're doing another Reflex Blue Show.
Wow.
Snap. What's going on today? It's a beautiful sunshiny day here in Omaha, as opposed to, I think it was kind of rainy the last time we did this.
Yeah, but it's always rainy in Portland.
That's true, so, except for now. Now I have it on good authority it is not.
Yeah, to bring the rain into the show, we're welcome to introduce Jeff Fisher from Logomotives.
Jeff, how are you doing today?
Great, guys. Actually, beautiful here today. Supposed to be in the 70s this weekend. It has been raining like crazy for the last 4 days. We've had half of our monthly rain already this month.
Like, and it is not, and we're recording this a week before it will actually air, so it's entirely possible there will be more. That's why all the vampires live up there in Twilight.
I don't know about vampires, but people have moss between their toes.
There you go. Okay, so this, Donovan, we are rolling on to the interviews, aren't we? This is our fourth in a row.
Let's interview Jeff, and this is his official bio.
Let's do it.
Jeff Fisher. Yeah, he's the author of Identity Crisis, 50 Redesigns That Transformed Stale Identities into Successful Brands, released by Howe Books in 2007, is the engineer of creative identity for the Portland-based firm Jeff Fisher Logomotives, a 30-year design veteran. He has been honored with over 600 regional, national, and international design awards, and is featured in over 100 books about logos, design business, and small business work. Are you leaving any room in these books for other people?
No, I'm not. Not at all.
No, okay. That's how you do it. That's how you take over a market.
Okay, and his first
the market
book,
of dudes who are in other dudes' books.
Right.
Okay,
yes.
And his first book, The Savvy Designer's Guide to Success, was released in 2004, has been reissued as a PDF on CD from howbookstore.com. Fisher is currently writing a new volume with the working title of Logotype on the topic of typography and identity design.
Yeah, Jeff, the first thing I want to ask you about is the Logotype book. I do a little teaching at a local college, teaching graphic design, mostly working in business identity and symbol design this quarter. And all of my students are kind of falling a little short on making a unique visual statement out of their logotype. And really, they're kind of concentrating on the symbol, less the type. So I'm getting, like, myriad typeset under, like, a really nice, like, really nice-looking mark. What's the differences between the two? Where do you find the attention span differs?
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to write this book is because there are no books out there about the topic. You do have a lot of logo books that just show a lot of actual symbols out there. Excuse me. And there's not much attention paid to creating logotypes or using typography in design. And one day I was at Powell Books here in Portland, a world-famous bookstore, and I'm going through the design book section, and there is no book on this topic at all. And so I came home, and I sent a short two-line book proposal to Howe Books about this, and within 10 minutes, I had an email back from them saying, we'd love to do this book. So I am including work from over 200 designers, and asking them why they make the type decisions they do, how they decide what will work and won't work for a given industry. And on the other side of it, I'm including the input of type designers from all over the world. So I think it would be a really good resource. It's something that a lot of designers, particularly when you're first starting out as a student or newbie designer, they struggle with.
Yeah, one of the things that I want to have, if we ever have you back on the show, I want you to go through the ins and outs of the two-line book pitch.
Yes.
And, yeah, I think we had Timothy O'Donnell on a while back, and I think he especially would be quite interested in hearing how those are put together.
But, yeah, he went through a little bit lengthier process.
Yeah, a bit. Okay.
Well, so, I've been lucky because with my initial book, Howe came to me and said they wanted me to write a book. And they wanted me to give them three ideas, and I sent them to them, and they hated all of them.
Nice.
And then one day, an editor from Howe contacted me, and they said, we have the perfect book for you to write. And that ended up being The Savvy Designer's Guide to Success. And that was you know, quite the struggle when you are actually assigned a book and have to create it.
Well, I kind of like how they came at you with that, like, hey, Jeff, we really want you to write this book. Send us some ideas. We want you to do it. And then you send us some ideas. They're like, yeah, we don't want you to write that.
Yeah, but it was real interesting. And then, of course, in the middle of the book, my editor got pregnant and left the company. I got a new editor. That editor, Amy Schell, has been my editor now for all three books. And so that's a real personal relationship that you develop with the person.
Now, when is Logotype coming out?
It'll be out sometime next year. The manuscript is due early in the fall, and I don't know the exact publishing date. The books usually start appearing on Amazon and elsewhere about 6 months before they come out.
Now, the book that's currently on the shelves, which is Identity Crisis, what's the difference between this and like the other Logo books that are around?
Identity Crisis is case studies from, I think, 35 different firms around the world on actually going through the process of redesigning an identity for a company, a nonprofit organization, government agency. There's a really good one of Portland State University. And it really helps the designer go through the process of how the identity was evaluated and then changed to the new image that's out there.
Nice. Okay, so Jeff, if it's fair to say, you kind of have expert status on company identity at this point, especially as noted by your sort of Jeff Fisher cheat sheet, which, by the way, I want to recommend to all future guests sending a Jeff Fisher cheat sheet in advance of a show.
Well, not what about Jeff Fisher, but...
Oh, could be. Here's things I know about Jeff.
It's probably how he gets into 100 books.
Right. But ever since Identity Crisis came out, you've been, you know, touring and speaking. You've been in interviewed in magazines on the topic. I'd really appreciate to get your take in what sets apart a successful company identity from an unsuccessful one.
I always say that is the fugly factor.
I love it when terms like that come up on the show.
Well, that's an official design term, and I really do think that you see a lot of those in the branding that's coming out for some major corporations now. Recently, there was the case with Tropicana redesigning their branding, and the public told them that it was fairly fugly, and it was pulled, and the old ID is being reintroduced. I think that the success of a brand reintroduction really does have a lot to do with the design firm listening to the company, listening to the customers, and really looking at what is out there and is successful in the market. And some of those parts are just not given a lot of consideration.
Right. Well, I think that's the Tropicana in and of itself was a really great example of what I call like the total redesign and how those are kind of prone to fail. It's one of those things that when you're a design student, you really, you know, when you get your hey, let's do a company identity project, you do it from the ground up. And then there's always this expectation that when you get out into the world, that's the way they all work. And, you know, in reality, just taking everything that's been established over 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 years and throwing it out the window is just not a really sound business strategy.
No, it's not. Both people inside the company and outside the company develop an emotional attachment to an existing identity. And that really needs to be taken into consideration when a firm comes in and wants to put their mark on a brand or a product. There's a lot of attachment there, and it's serious business.
Well, that's why I think like Steve Gordon loves the new Pepsi redesign so much, because they took what they had and kind of modified it, right?
I guess. Jeff?
Okay, now speaking of Steve.
Can we just real quick, Jeff, your take on the Pepsi?
I don't like the Pepsi at all.
Right. Okay. Now I wish we had Steve here.
I know. I wish we did, too. I think with the new Pepsi identity, if you add one line to it, you have an image of a plumber's butt crack. And it kind of looks like someone bending over, and you've got the rear view of their, maybe their best side or their worst side.
I have to say that the butt crack take on the Pepsi logo so far, totally my favorite.
My favorite thing that Pepsi's doing right now, though, is this throwback, where they're basically saying, They're basically saying, like, hey, we've been selling you crappier soda, so for one summer you can have it how it used to be, which is better.
You know what I
like
about
real sugar?
What I like about that, and Jeff, and I think this is a topic we can talk about in general too, is that I got a throwback Mountain Dew the other day, and it was it's the Mountain Dew logo that I grew up with, you know, from like probably the 80s or something, or you know, a variation off that.
Does it look like the Mountain Dew?
Yeah, and I went back and I saw that in the store, and it didn't even faze me till I was in my car drinking it that it was the throwback version, because I just immediately saw that, totally clicked. That's the real Mountain Dew logo to me. So, I mean, it's pretty easy, I think, for people to develop more of a relationship with a company logo than they think, as long as they have a good relationship with that company.
Well, I think that was the problem with Tropicana. People went into the store, they went to the shelf where they usually grab the Tropicana, and it didn't look like it anymore. And it's confusing to the consumer.
Right, a little bit.
Now, the reason I mentioned Steve, though, was when he was here last week, he actually mentioned, we said you were the next guest, and he actually told us that you went to the Howe conference, you dropped your pants on the stage and did the whole presentation in your underwear.
I have done that, yes.
Right, coming up is the 2009 Howe conference in Austin, which, I might add, people you can still sign up for, even though the early bird discount is now gone.
Yeah, they have a whole menu of selections right now.
Yeah, they've really broken it out this year in how you can go.
Now, what
hey, I punned that and I didn't even mean to.
Now we're asking, what are you presenting on this year at Howe?
I can tell you that. Oh wait, but we should let Jeff.
My topic is why pay for it when you can get it for free.
Okay.
And that's a topic that my mother gave me that heading many years ago, and I don't know if she was talking about sex or what, but why should you pay for it when you can get it for free?
I think it applies.
And my topic is really marketing and what a designer can do to market themselves without having to spend a fortune. And there's just so many options out there.
Snap. Could you just, if it would be all right, because I'm not going to be able to make it to the Howe conference, can you just
Tell me all of that information. You're trying
now.
To get the free.
I'm trying to get the free Howe conference.
Yeah.
I think you have to buy the MP3 from Howe afterwards. But
I'll
it'll be social networking, press releases, all the tools that a designer can use with absolutely no cost to get their name out there, get their designs out there, and really reach their target market.
Well, now, and I've seen that you, I mean, certainly if someone is going to go to the Howe conference and speak about this, Jeff, I mean, you would be my pick. You know, you had more than anyone else. We had Mig Reyes on the show a couple weeks back, and Mig, he does the Mig tip for us now, but he's my example of, like, the world's most connected student designer. But, Jeff, you seem to be...
Exactly, and we connected at the Creative Freelancer Conference in Chicago.
Right. See, everybody knows Mig.
Yep.
But what I'm saying is everyone else knows Jeff. I see you on, like, I almost want to ask you a little bit about, like, your Twitter philosophy or something like that, where, like, you're on there all the time, and I see that, you know, some things that you're putting out there, here's something that I've done, or here's something that someone else has done, and then I kind of see some repeats. So do you have a Twitter strategy, or is that delving into the Howe topic, and I need to interview you in a couple weeks afterwards to talk about it?
Well, part of my Twitter philosophy is, you do have to kind of repeat some of the topics as the world spins around and time zones change. That's hard to say. Because you are reaching different people at different times during the day. And I'll get a lot of response from people in Europe at one time during the day, and then across the United States as people wake up. So there is some repeating. Part of that is just getting the information out to new followers. I was listed the other day as one of the 85 designers to follow or something.
I saw that, yeah.
And all of a sudden there was this huge influx of new followers who had not paid any attention to me before, and I've been getting really good feedback from them.
Nice.
Actually, speaking of Mig, let's just do the Mig tip right now.
Hey, let's throw it out there. Hey, Mig, give us a tip, and... Yeah, let's do that.
Cool, thanks guys. So for this student tip, I want to recommend that every student makes themselves a process book right when they're going for interviews. Because talent and execution are one thing, and, you know, they're expected. However, showing thought process is a completely different thing. So to leverage yourselves in these interviews, make yourself a process book, which can be a case study of your best or your favorite projects, and you want to show your thumbnails, kind of your visual exploration, your mood boards. And if you don't have the time to make yourself a nicely bound process book or a case study book, what you could do then is bring your sketchbooks to an interview. A lot of people are kind of thrown off by that, and it makes you unique. So being able to show your thumbnails and your sketches is definitely going to put you at the forefront of your interviews. So just remember, you get hired for your creative genius, not just the work that you've already done for somebody else.
That was fantastic.
That was an amazing MGTIP. So Jeff, and also if I can kind of keep trying to bring it back to that, you know, your appearances at the How, are you also on the Surviving and Thriving panel? Did I get that information right?
And I'm on that with Steve Gordon and Jenny Herberger and a few other people. And we've told How that they have to supply us with lots of coffee because it's early in the morning.
Nice.
And I think I was a little frightened by the speakers gone wild quality of that panel, but I think it'll be a really good thing for people to come out and hear some, you know, real world descriptions of what is happening with the economy in design and how designers are dealing with it.
See, my original question there was going to be, Jeff, could you please explain for us what that is about? Because Steve had massive explanation.
No, we had Bryn explain it to Steve.
Kinda, oh, well, yeah, but you may need to remind
Steve. Doesn't know what he's talking about. So.
Right. Yeah, but yeah, go for Jeff, and then Steve will chime in every now and then and say something in cool code, and you'll be like, oh, I don't know what he said, but whatever it was cool. Sorry, now that's kind of a burn on Steve. Sorry, Steve, I love you.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, now I know. You know, you're specializing in identities. What is it that made you move towards specializing in this one sort of design where a lot of designers kind of do, you know, a variety of items?
Actually, you know what? I love that question. I want to hear a little bit more about what you were doing beforehand. Can we get like the Jeff Fisher, you know, sort of life story? How'd you get into design? And then, yeah, how did you come to start focusing on identities?
I was one of those kids in grade school that was, you know, interested in art from the very beginning. And wanted to be an artist when I grew up. And, of course, everyone told me that you will never make a living as an artist. But I persevered through art. Yeah, persevered through art. Had lots of people outside of my family supporting me. And in high school, I was such a pain in the rear end for the school that they put me on independent study in art. And through that, I came across a book called Graphic Design by good old Milton, and that defined what I wanted to do and showed me that someone could make a living doing it. And so that was the plan. Once I went off to school, I started off in the fine art department, hated the program, absolutely hated the program. It was very interesting. It would have been 1974, and one of my design professors was never happy unless he had any woman in the class crying during reviews and stuff because he felt that women didn't have a place in graphic design.
Wow.
So
wow.
He kind of made it a miserable place for all the students, male and female. And I ended up almost quitting school, and someone told me I needed to go talk to a professor by the name of Roy Paul Nelson in the journalism school at University of Oregon. And he taught advertising design, publication design, some typography, cartooning, just really incredible courses.
Yeah, kind of everything.
Yeah, and I went in and talked to him, and he said, get out of the fine arts school and into this school, but you have to take all the journalism coursework to take my classes. So he kind of set me up as a designer/writer early on. And I got out of school and moved to Portland in 1980 in an economy exactly like we're having now. And there were no jobs. And I just did informational interviews with anyone willing to take the time to talk to me. And a lot of independent work started coming my way. And for the first 17 years of my career, I did what I thought a designer was to do, and that was take on every and all projects that came my way. I had three traditional jobs. I was the art director of a group of medical publications, the art director of a small ad agency, and the creative director of a clothing company in Seattle. But I was still always doing contract work on the side. Okay. And after 17 years, I was burned out. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was having a talk with my sister, who owns an ad agency and PR firm, and I was telling her what was going on. And she said, well, why don't you do what you enjoy most? And I kind of looked at her with, you know, this stupid smirk on my face. And she said, logo design. It was kind of one of those, I should have had a V8 moments and, you know, hitting myself in the forehead. And so that's when I really shifted the focus to identity design and have been doing that ever since. So that's been over a decade of focusing on identity and branding.
So now when you approach, say, new business, do you find it is most beneficial to actually? No, you just wrote this article too. I was gonna lead into it.
Never tell your client their logo sucks.
Yeah. Yes. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well,
that was a great article, by the way.
Yeah. Did this come from like a real life experience where you told someone that their logo sucked?
And was that your
not
first
not
client?
Me telling that, but I'm always having particularly design students come up to me and say, well, gee, isn't it a great idea to go into a business and say, you know, your design that you're using now really sucks and I can do better. And so I kind of evolved that article out of, that's not the good idea. That's not the best way to establish a relationship with a client. And the minute you tell any client that, you can be sure that they designed it themselves, or their wife, son, daughter, next door neighbor, someone close to them is responsible for the design. And I actually mentioned never telling your client their logo sucks in the foreword of the book, Identity Crisis. And that is the one piece of information in the book that keeps coming back to me. Everybody's like, you know, if I learned anything in the book, it was that. And I think that's a good thing.
From page two, but then there were just lots of pictures.
I got through about two pages of the book, thanks.
Right.
Excellent,
So yes, and that honestly, that happened to me, I think this is like 2 weeks ago, and I, Donovan, I'm not sure if I was asking you about it, but I asked a superstar designer, Drew Davies, I asked Adam Nielsen, you know, a lot of people that have been on the show, okay, here's a company, I really like them, they're, you know, for example, a doctor's office or a dentist or something.
Yeah, you asked me about this.
Yeah, okay, and I said, okay, they have terrible design, but a good business. I want to help them by bringing better design, and everyone was like, yeah, dude, I don't even know how to go about that. Jeff, do you have an in for a situation like that? Say you love your dry cleaner, but they have a horrible logo.
It certainly doesn't hurt to just present examples of what you have done in the past to show them that, you know, you could help them improve on what they have. So often a business thinks that when they're approached by a designer, that means they're going to have to throw out everything associated with their long-term image or brand. And a lot of times it's just tweaking it to make it better. So there are tactful ways of approaching a client saying, you know, this is what I can do. Do you have any need for my services?
So where'd you come up with the name Logomotives for your company? I mean, I worked at the railroad before, so it makes sense if
you
I name myself
did.
That.
He's not
yeah.
lying.
I did the website for a railroad, so.
Oh, that's great. No, I've always had an interest in trains, and since I was a little boy, and I used to sit on the front porch of my grandparents' house and watch the trains go by, and that's always kind of been in the back of my mind. I've got several train sets, love going on train trips, and so I initially started moving my business towards the name Logomotive in like 1985 and created a logo for it, used it once in an ad, and everybody hated it. Everyone hated it. They said that I was getting rid of, you know, all my past reputation as a designer. Tried again in the early 90s to do it. Got the same response from everybody. finally one day I was doodling about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and I stuck the Jeff Fisher on top of the logo, and it was like, ah, Jeff Fisher Locomotives, and that worked.
There you go.
Yeah, that made everybody happy. But the train thing has been a constant. In fact, Saturday, well, the 9th of May is, is National Train Day. And I will be a clown at the Portland Union Station National Train Day event.
I was hoping Toots Caboose was going to come up.
I am Toots Caboose. Okay, I am Toots.
That's what we were going to ask you about. So you're giving up all the, you're taking your credentials and you're moving into clown school, or you've moved to clown school.
I went to clown school. It was incredible. It was something that I wanted to do last year when they had it here in Portland for the first year, and absolutely no date on their schedule fit with my schedule. The week of clown school, I was speaking at the HAL conference in Boston, and I didn't know if they were going to do it again or not. And this year they announced that they were going to have this clown school and select clowns for the Portland Rose Festival. And in the small world of things, the sponsor is Amtrak Cascades. And I told them when I did my audition that, I had this idea for this Toots Caboose clown character, and they just went nuts. And so, They're really playing up on that with Amtrak being the sponsor, and I will be in the Portland Grand Floral Rose Parade on, I think it's June 6th, and I'll be in the Portland Junior Rose Festival Parade, and we have a character clown corps of 24 clowns from all different walks of life, and I think the ages are 17 to 65. And it's really been a fascinating experience.
Has this experience
affected like your design profession?
I want to know if there's a Toots Caboose logo. There should be.
But we had to design our character, and so we had to go through the designing our own makeup and designing our costume, and so there were design aspects of it. I was recently telling Bryn that perhaps Toots should show up at a HAL event in the future and do a thing on personal branding.
Is Toots a hobo style clown?
More of a European.
Because then I was going to say that if I were going to do a clown mark, I would want to be a hobo style clown so that I could have the world's second actual reason to use hobo in design.
What's the first person? Because it's awesome.
Eric from Volume Inc.'s student did the book about, I think it was about legalizing marijuana, and he said it completely in hobo, and he was like, yeah, that's appropriate.
That's perfect.
But, okay.
I think I would use Papyrus or Comic Sans.
Nice. Comic Sans for...
I did.
Sure, you could do
I
that.
I saw a truck with hobo and Papyrus on the back of it, and it was like this combination.
Did you get a photo of that?
No, it's like they were like delivering fish in this truck.
Done. I'm sold on that.
Yeah. Okay. Made me hungry. It's actually lunchtime, so we're going to take off.
Yeah, Jeff, I want to thank you again for being on the show with us this time. Donovan will see you in a few weeks at the HAL conference.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so if you guys get out to the HAL conference, make sure there will be more than one opportunity to get your Jeff Fisher fix. Once again, his presentation, which I'm going to get on MP3, and at the Surviving and Thriving panel with our own Steve Ridiculous Gordon. So once again, thanks, Jeff, for being on the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And
take care, guys.
Thank you. We'll see everyone, or we'll see you with our ears in a couple weeks.
To send questions or comments to The Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.